This week, Soshi Talks returns to WYSO. Soshi Talks is a collaboration with the Southwest Ohio Council for Higher Education. Once a month, we'll hear from faculty and staff from area colleges and universities on a variety of subjects. It's an effort to bring Miami Valley research and thinking into the public arena, a way to enlighten the world with local knowledge. This week, Kurt Reinhart, chief engineer with the Miami Conservancy District, presents The Great Flood, how devastation turned to innovation.
Started in March 1913 with a storm system that dumped between 8 and 11 inches of rain over southwest Ohio, a storm that actually affected states from Oklahoma and Kansas through Ohio and into Pennsylvania, very widespread storm. The worst of it was right here in southwest Ohio in the Dayton area. The community in Dayton and surrounding communities were used to flooding. There had been at least 10 floods since Dayton was settled in 1796, so about every 10 to 12 years they could expect flooding in downtown, but nothing prepared them for the devastation of March 1913. The water started rising. It started raining on Easter Sunday, March 23rd. The river started rising. By Tuesday the 25th, the entire city was engulfed with water. If you think about Dayton and you draw a circle from Dayton Art Institute to Children's Medical Center to Stivers High School for the Arts to Wright Dunbar neighborhood back to Grandview Hospital, more than a mile wide circle, all that area was underwater. Downtown Dayton, as much as 10 feet at 3rd and Main, some of the other areas in the city were 17 to 20 feet deep of water. So massive devastation throughout the community. More than 300 people in southwest Ohio that were killed. There was more than $100 million in damages, and that's 1913 economy. Today we're talking in the billions of dollars in damages just in southwest Ohio. So as you can imagine, a major life-altering event to the citizens of Dayton and the surrounding communities. Rescue and relief efforts began immediately. John Patterson at NCR headed up the relief, built boats to send out into the community to rescue people that were stranded in buildings, stranded on rooftops, set up a hospital, a morgue, kitchens to feed the people, housing for the people, built a tent city on the NCR campus, which was south of town and did not flood. So it was a place for everyone to go to get away from the flood. The flood itself only lasted less than a week. By the next week, the water was down out of the city, but the devastation left behind from overturned buildings, burned out buildings where gas lines had exploded, to inches and even feet of nasty, smelly, yucky mud left behind covering everything. So the cleanup effort was huge. The community had experienced some flooding in the past, but were not ready for this. But here's where it really talks about the spirit of the community, because they said, this cannot happen again. We're not going to live with this. We got to find a solution. Right away, everybody started coming up with ideas. They formed a flood prevention committee. The first thing they decided they needed to do was raise funds to come up with a solution. They started soliciting funds. They had rallies at the old courthouse at 3rd and Main, solicited funds from the community, from the very people that just suffered death and destruction from their families and their properties, and said, please donate to this cause. Within 2 months after the flood, by the end of May 1913, they had raised over $2 million for the flood prevention effort. Once again, 1913 dollars. That's like starting a campaign today and raising $50 million in donations within the next 2 months. It's just an amazing effort just in fundraising. They accomplished their goal. They got their money. They said, where do we go from here? The flood prevention community started looking, and they hired an engineer from Memphis, Tennessee, Arthur Morgan, who had worked in drainage and different water-related engineering projects. He came to Dayton and immediately started driving up and down the valley, looking at where the flooding was, what the devastation was, the topography of the Miami Valley and the Great Miami River, and came back to the committee within a couple months, said he had looked at a variety of solutions from wider river channels, diverting the river, building levees. His proposal was extremely radical at the time. He proposed building a series of large dams in rural areas that would hold back large amounts of water only during the flood, but the rest of the time the dams would not perform any other function, so they'd be dry dams. Working in conjunction with the dams would be levees and channel improvements to pass the water from the rainfall. Immediately, everybody said, this is unproven. Nobody's ever tried something like this. This is a crazy idea. So instead of bowing to pressure, Arthur Morgan brought in what he called a board of consulting engineers. He invited top engineers from academia, from federal government, from around the country, and some of them were his largest critics that said, this has never been tried, this will not work. Brought them together, presented a lot of information about his investigations, why they came to this conclusion. By the end of this series of meetings, the Board of Consulting Engineers endorsed this plan and said, this is a great idea. This will work. Okay, now they got an idea. It's a few months after the flood. It's late in 1913. So they really had three major hurdles. Number one, legal. There was no legal way to build this system. Number two, financial. How are they going to pay for it? And then number three was technical. Okay, we've promised this really creative flood protection system. It's got dams, it's got levees. How is it actually going to work? The legal challenges they set about, and all these things were resolved concurrently. They didn't do one, then the other. It was concurrently. So the legal challenges, they wrote a new law for the state of Ohio that was enacted in 1914 called the Ohio Conservancy Act. And what it did was allow for creation of a new special purpose regional district that was separate from the cities, separate from the counties, but had certain powers that could address these flooding problems. The key things were it could cross city boundaries, it could cross county boundaries, it could incorporate multiple jurisdictions, it had the power to levy assessments, had the power to take properties, own properties, and build and maintain this flood protection system. As I said, it was passed into law in 1914. As with any major sweeping legislation, it was immediately challenged by a lot of different groups, withstood many court challenges. It was finally upheld by the Ohio Supreme Court in 1915. At that time, the leaders said, okay, we've met the court challenges, and they petitioned what's called the Conservancy Court, which was a new body formed from existing judges from the counties, to form the Miami Conservancy District. So the district was formed in 1915 to move forward with the challenge of building flood protection. The second challenge, obviously, was financial. How do you pay for this thing? Well, fortunately, the law was written that allowed the Conservancy District to levy assessments on properties and political subdivisions that benefit from the flood protection system. So with this, they started looking at what would be the value of flood protection to the communities. They hired appraisers, and they appraised nearly 80,000 properties throughout the watershed that were either affected by the flooding or would be affected by the flood protection system, came back with a report, which is called the appraisal record, that said, this is the benefit based on the damage the property suffered, the loss of value to the property because of the flood, and the future increase in value of the property once the flood protection system is in place. And that was the basis for the benefits to individual properties from this flood protection system. At the same time, they had established benefits to the cities and counties, not only for flooding of municipal buildings, firehouses, parks, that type of thing, but also prevention of flooding and damage to the streets, the bridges, the sewers, the water lines, the fact that they would not have to respond to flooding, close roads, rescue people, the associated disease and destruction, and also the loss of business, the effect on the economy if all of a sudden businesses cannot get loans because their buildings are washed away, entire manufacturing plants that are shut down due to flooding. So there was this whole economic piece that by establishing benefits to the properties and to the cities and counties allowed the Conservancy District to levy an assessment. With this assessment, started in 1919, they sold bonds to build the flood protection system and then paid for, between 1919 and 1949, paid the almost $31 million capital cost to build the flood protection system. Those assessments continue today at a much lower rate for operation, maintenance, the flood protection. So what was devised back in 1917 to pay for the system still pays for that operation and maintenance. The third challenge, maybe the biggest one of all, was the technical challenge. Okay, we've got this promise of dams and levees and this integrated flood protection system that holds back water without manual interruption. How is this really going to work? How are we really going to build this? A lot of challenges or a lot of difficulties. An example, Arthur Morgan believed in what he called conclusive engineering analysis. Everything he studied, all the nuances to make sure that the best possible alternative that could financially and realistically be built was incorporated in the plan. And once the plans were designed, he didn't just stop there. The engineering staff and the construction staff had the ability to come back and say, okay, we're building this, but here's something better that will work. Let's incorporate this into the plan. So it was an ongoing engineering that allowed the flood protection system to be designed and built like it was. Another example was the hydraulics of the dams and the stilling basins at the dams, which captured the kinetic energy of the flowing water and slowed it down so you didn't have erosion. There was theory, but nobody had ever built a system like this. So they built scale models and modeled them in Colonel Edward Deed's swimming pool to see how these dams would actually work and did physical models to design the dam. Once all this was done, they were getting ready to start construction when World War I in Europe drug the United States into the conflict. There was a shortage of manpower. There was a shortage of equipment. So the entire project basically was on hold for a year while they were finishing the design, but they were gearing up for construction. 1919, the conflict in Europe was over. United States was again at peace, and construction started. In the time from 1919 to 1922, there was about a three-year span where all this came together. Construction of all the dams and levees at all the cities was all done concurrently, and the project was completed by 1922, less than 10 years after the flood. One of the things during construction of the dams was they were in rural areas away from the cities, and Arthur Morgan believed that having itinerant camps where people, itinerant workers would come in, payroll would happen, you know, they'd get their money every couple of weeks, the gambling, the prostitution, the alcohol, violence, all that broke out. That was typical of construction camps of the day. Arthur Morgan said, this is not a good way to do business. He designed small villages. His wife, Lucy, actually designed the houses, and they built villages at each dam for workers to come to bring their family. They had schools, they had clinics, they had groceries, they had a community center at each village. These were thriving villages during construction. Once the project was done, there was no longer a use. The buildings were sold, the community centers and the schools and the clinics closed, and people moved away. But it brought those people to the community that became part of the community, and many of them stayed in the Dayton area. So briefly, wrapping it up, successfully within 10 years, they went from devastation like the community had never seen to a brand new concept, state-of-the-art flood protection system that today, nearly 100 years later, has successfully prevented floods more than 1,700 times in Dayton and the other communities along the Great Miami River.
Kurt Reinhart, Chief Engineer with the Miami Conservancy District. You can find out more about Soshi Talks at soshi.org.